NPR's All Songs Considered and Tiny Desk Concerts host and unflagging showgoer Bob Boylan has a new book out titled Your Song Changed My Life, where he talks with 35 musicians about the music that inspired them. A simple question. Is there an unforgettable song that changed your life? He poses the question to some of today's best-loved musical legends and rising musical stars. And the result is the book Your Song Changed My Life. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Bob Boylan to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. Great to have you aboard.
Thanks, Joe.
So at what point did you decide to take on a project like this?
After talking with so many musicians about how they got to where they got to, and it was always a sort of fascinating, but so often, and in some ways not unexpected, it was music that drove them to music. That pivotal moment, that moment where often when they're young, that something just captures them and says, I want to do that. I love those moments. And so I thought I'd sort of compile them. Because sometimes it's a department of the obvious, and sometimes it's like, really? That person?
Did you find when you asked the question that some people struggled with it and some people had an answer right away, or was it usually fairly definitive?
It was often like I was a psychiatrist and they were on a couch.
Right.
Because when you start this, often, more often than not, it was, there really isn't just one. Oh, really? Tell me about that. When did you start listening to music? Did your parents play music around the house? Did your mother play an instrument? Did you? And you just start digging, and all of a sudden they'll say, and then one day I was driving down the road, I was in the car, Conor Oberst, driving down the road in the car with my mother, and we come and we stop the car, and there's on the radio is a song by this guy Don McLean called American Pie. And I said, Mom, don't turn it off.
Did you write the book of love, and do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so.
And then you think about Conor Oberst, who is an amazing lyricist, right? And you think about that song, American Pie, and how it tells a story, and how Connor tells a story, and then all of a sudden it all makes sense.
And when you think about it, just that wording of a song that changes your life, I mean, that is a severe thing, isn't it?
It's not like, I like this song.
Right.
Right. It's the moment where you take an action, a moment where you say, Lucinda Williams would tell you when she heard Dylan, I want to do that. I want to be that person. I want to do that thing. I can't sing, but neither can Bob Dylan. So all I got to do is write great songs, is what Lucinda Williams told me. And I actually think she's a great singer, but maybe she wasn't when she was, 13 and first heard it. But it gave her the confidence. That's the thing about something that changes you. It makes you able to do something that you didn't think you had, perhaps the courage or even think you had the talent to accomplish.
It also is striking of how many of these were moments in a car or moments on the radio, and brings back that time, too, of how powerful a medium it is.
Radio, I like radio. How about you, Joe?
Yeah, I've made my place that this is what I want to do, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the wonderful thing about radio that's different than play the song that you want to hear at the moment is the randomness of it. You don't have control over what's about to happen, but you turn it on in hopes that you'll hear something great, either that you could sing along to and roll the windows down, perhaps if you're driving, or it's some meaningful moment in that's going on with a friend that you can both relate to. That randomness, I think, is also what makes us a little more susceptible to it coming into our lives and being more powerful. Sturgill Simpson tells a story of how he was driving down the road after having been away from Kentucky for a long time, had been in the Navy. He's a changed person. He wasn't the person he was. And then he hears Bill Monroe, Wayfaring Stranger.
I am a poor wayfaring stranger while traveling through this world below. There is no sin weakness, torn or danger. In that bright world to which I go.
It makes him pull over to the side of the road, and he realizes that he's lost himself, and he wants to find himself, and he wants to make music. He wants to be that person making music. That's beautiful.
There's a voice that I can hear sometime out here on the mountain. When it's dark and the sky is pouring acid like a fountain. And the memories like cold dust in the window of my house. So ask them no more questions, they can't sell you no more lies.
I'm also fascinated because sometimes there's a direct connection. You can understand the connection. And you have a story in here with Philip Glass talking about how Spike Jones Spike Jones's version of William Tell Overture of how that is the song that changed his life.
Right? I mean, who would have ever, you could have made a list of 100 songs and that would have been at the bottom of my list about this absolutely the most serious composer I spoke to in the book picks the wackiest of tunes. And anyone who's heard Spike Jones' version of the William Tell Overture knows it's basically a cartoon in audio form with, you know, everything pots and pans and the whole,
right.
the whole thing. But Philip grew up in a family... Jewish home where they played lots of Yiddish comedy records, as well as a father who had a radio repair shop that sold records in and sold fairly serious classical, modern classical music. But both those things were inspiring to him. As a little kid, he loved listening to stories and jokes on the radio and certainly knew classical music and knew the William Tell Overture, and hearing that in comedy form just inspired him to want to do something. It wasn't what he wound up doing, though he has lots of humor in the operas that he writes, but he didn't wind up making comedy music, but it did inspire him to want to be a writer.
And you do see those, as I mentioned in the question, you have those times where it's a fairly direct connection. You can see the direct connection, and other times it's a little more vague.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Ritter picking Girl from North Country from Bob Dylan's Nashville Skyline totally makes sense, right?
If you're traveling to the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. For she once was a true love of mine.
You could even say someone like Dave Grohl was really inspired by this band Naked Ray Gun, which is a punk band. Totally makes sense. But then you get something like Cat Power picking Aretha Franklin, or Leon Bridges picks Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And you just go, seriously? He didn't pick Sam Cooke? But sometimes it's that moment. And for Leon Bridges, he's in a coffee shop with a couple of aging hippies, and they all start singing songs together. And Leon sits down and sings, and these people say, hey, you got a good voice. He's in his 20s. He's not, I mean, Leon Bridges has only been making music for 7 years. He sells tons of records now, but you... He started doing all this very late in life, and he was inspired by singing the song Just a Song, a Graham Nash song.
Just a song before I go, to whom it may concern. Traveling twice the speed of sound, it's easy to get burned. When the shows were on,
it it also, I was mentioning the scene in the car, but a lot of times, and I think Jeff Tweedy stuck out in my mind of also discovering what your siblings are listening to, of what's on in the house.
Yeah, and often it's the older sibling who's got the collection and the younger sibling who just soaks it in, and
right.
It's so good. That happened for him. Jeff Tweedy picked the Birds' Turn, Turn, Turn.
To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose under heaven.
Again, not too far from what you would expect. He had a number of songs to pick from. One of them was Daydream Believer, which is a song the Monkees made famous, and all this around the same time, around 1965.
Oh, I could hide 'neath the wings of the bluebird as she sings. The 6 o'clock alarm would never ring.
But both, curiously, and you know, until you start to think about this, both of those songs curiously have their roots in folk music. Turn, Turn, Turn was a song Pete Seeger took words from the Bible but made it a song. And then in the case of Daydream Believer, it was also like a John Stewart, who's got his roots in Kingston Trio and folk music too. So it's curious. I'm not even sure Tweedy would have been aware of that as a child, that his love for folk music, although were in these rock-based songs, had folk roots.
I guess in most cases it is multiple, isn't it? I mean, that's the truth of it. It screws up your project, but but it does. It is, right? It's a lot of different influences.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I could think of, even for my own self, and my choice of music was a song by the Beatles, A Day in the Life. It certainly could have easily been a different Beatles song. It could have been, you know, I Want to Hold Your Hand, or the one of the first songs I ever heard by them, just for sheer fact that it made me want to go out and really spend my money and be a lover of music. But I guess what I try to do when I talk to all these folks is, okay, yeah, you love lots of stuff, but what's the thing that made, like in case of Leon Bridges, what's the thing that made you want to actually play music? And for him, he went out and bought a guitar shortly after hearing that song. Or, you know, Jimmy Page, hearing a friend play a Lonnie Donegan song, basically a cover of a Lead Belly song, Rock On Line, made him want to, you know, play the guitar. So it's really that, what's the moment that made you not just love music, because lots of songs make us love music, but what's the one that made you take action?
Was there a typical age that you found that was the aha moment for a lot of people?
It really was in those early teens. You know, like everything, it's a bell curve, and Bon Iver picked one from a year ago. You know, he picked a song from a project he was working on where he was just so taken by what he's written songs, sure, but he was a producer in this case with a group called The Staves, and they were stuck on a song, trying to write a song, and he helped make it. He just saw magic unfold before his eyes with just a simple idea of, when they were stuck on the song, taking a vocalist's and looping their vocals and using that as a base for a song.
How can I want you a little bit more than I did before? I don't need you, but I want you back a little bit more than I knew. Now I can't go back to life before I knew that you didn't love me. You didn't need me no more. You didn't love me no more. You didn't want me at all.
But then he saw, like, what his role was as both a host. I mean, it was at his studio. They lived there for a while. And it was kind of like a little hotel recording studio in some ways. And he just saw what the power of getting an artist to find their space can do toward making great music. And that changed the way he looks at making music.
Were you able to talk to any artists about the song that changed their life, about artist who told you that it was that artist you were talking to that, that changed their life?
I thought it was really funny because, yes, is the answer. Smokey Robinson was the first one that happened to, and there were two in the book. But for Smokey Robinson, Shop Around, which was one of the early hits that Smokey and the Miracles had, then just called the Miracles.
My mama told me, you better shop around. Oh, yeah, you better shop around. Shop around.
I mean, it gave them money to do what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was as basic as that. It just opened up a world to make it possible for a label like Motown to exist where it didn't exist before. And so it was a life-changing song. It wasn't something he heard. It was something he helped create, but it was the song that changed his life.
And also, if Michael Stipe said that, named an artist, and then you were to talk to the artist and say, Michael Stipe said that it was you who influenced me, how do artists react to that? I assume there's an understanding because they have that artist.
I think in Michael's case is an easy one because he picked a Patti Smith song. He picked Birdland.
Drift to the heavy ship. Let the ship fly.
An artist that he discovered reading a magazine while in detention at school, and followed the, Patti's career, and you know, 20 something years later, wound up on stage with her, singing. So and admiring one another. So in that case, I think it wouldn't be far off. It's not a stretch at all for to think that Patti would completely understand Michael's enchantment with her music and his fascination, and I think it probably goes both ways.
Do you tend to listen to a song differently as you were writing this book and putting it together? When you hear a song on the radio, or you hear a song, or you put a song on, that you now have a context of how it affected somebody. Do you listen to it differently?
Oh, absolutely. I mentioned the Jimmy Page, the Rock Island Line version of by Lonnie Donegan, and when, especially because I started digging into these songs and spending more time with them. Rock Island Line was a song that we, for anybody who's my age, which meaning growing up around the time the Beatles came to America, being a young teen around that time, would know that there was a movement that inspired the Beatles called skiffle music, and Lonnie Donegan was sort of the king of that kind of almost rockabilly sort of music, and it had its basis in blues, and I knew that. I knew that stuff, and I knew that Rock Island Line was a song that Lead Belly did too. But when I started to think about, like, okay, Jimmy Page, great player of blues and rock, and the greatest rock and roll band on the planet as far as rock music goes, or real rock music goes, okay, I'd say that what Lonnie Donegan did to Lead Belly's song was like the difference between if you imagine that song's about a train. If you imagine Lead Belly's song being about like a train pulled by horses, it's the pace of that.
Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a road to ride. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. If you want to ride, you got to ride it like you're fine to get your ticket and station on the Rock Island Line.
Where Lonnie Donegan in the 50s was more like a train run by steam engines.
I'll tell you where I'm going, boy. Down the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. The Rock Island Line is a road to ride, yes. The Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. And if you want to ride it, got to ride it like you find to get your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line.
And Jimmy Page being like a train run by electricity. It's the that kind of change over time and how one artist takes a song or takes an idea and advances that idea. And so I never really thought of Lonnie Donegan's song, Rock Island Line, being an advancement of Lead Belly's song before, but now I can't but help it. And I also think about what it did to all the great music Page made with Led Zeppelin.
The new book is Your Song Changed My Life. It is published by William Morrow. It's by Bob Boylan, host and creator of NPR Music's All Songs Considered. Bob, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Congratulations on the book, and thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. A great pleasure.
Thanks, Joe. You're good at this.
Thank you very much. Right back to you. Thank you. Again, the name of the new book is Your Song Changed My Life. It is by Bob Boylan, published by William Morrow. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.